It's Friday, January 10th. This is episode 25 of The Shawnakee, Driver's Re-Education, Part 2. For The Shawnakee, I'm Patrick McLean. It was to be the fall of Fishbinder, fully empowered agent of the DMV. The collapse of one of the low upon whom assurance sits like a silk hat on a Bradford millionaire. And like all great tragedies, he was to be brought low by his own hubris.
Class, your homework is to be on the lookout for violations of the motor code, and I want each of you to have an example, a specific car, place, and violation, if possible, a license plate.
Now we were to become the internal secret police of the DMV? Not without a fight. Joe,
hello there,
the nice old guy, and I plotted like thieves. We aimed to strike a blow for all of us held in thrall by the minor tyrants of this world. We had cast ourselves as avenging angels, striking a blow for everyone who had been trapped or beset by the slow-moving, sausage-grinding machine of the Department of Motor Vehicles. Everyone who had been deprived of sunlight, loved ones, laughter, and the pursuit of honest enterprise by the blunt machinery of the business end of government. With Joe's wife as a wheel woman,
hello there,
we tailed our prey. The soulless eye of the video camera documented every move Fishbinder made. We were trolling for vehicular transgression, and the fishing was good. Three rolling stops, an illegal right on red, numerous failures to signal. These last seemingly minor violations were especially delicious, for we had endured a 45-minute lecture on the importance of turn signals. Cancer, hurricanes, nuclear war, they were nothing compared to the evils of unused turn signals. Armed with a videotape of damning evidence, we were eager for our next class. But we reckoned not what we dealt with. We had followed Fishbinder a short distance in the material world, but we had not journeyed into the tortured house of his soul. We were not there in the morning when he carefully brushed his teeth. Right to left, top first and then bottom, obsession and compulsion clawing at the fabric of his life. We could not know how much the illusion of rules mattered to this man. So often had he been without boundaries or safety, unable to govern his passions, he suppressed them and sought to hold together the tattered remnants of his soul with the motor vehicle code. In every way, the civil service suited Fishbinder. No glamour, not enough money to become sidetracked on fatuous luxuries, just steady, stable employment. Uninspired, for inspiration is a dangerous thing. But Fishbinder did have power. No matter rank or status, rich or poor, ugly or beautiful, all must path beneath death's scythe and also through the gray halls of the Department of Motor Vehicles. After all, driver's licenses and driver's licensees are both issued with expiration dates. One might have described the air as fateful that night we sought to spring our trap. A late afternoon thunderstorm had filled the atmosphere with ozone and drenched those among the class who were forced to ride scooters. The defiant indignity of the liquor sickle, seeming to cry through clenched, bug-splattered teeth, "You can take my license, but you'll never take my transportation." Fishbinder was in high, tent revival form that night. You see, it was our last class, his last chance to save the damned, convert the sinners, and persecute the evil. The class was the only forgiveness built into the motor vehicle system, the last rung of the ladder for the damned, and he was swinging that rope ladder as hard as he could. At the height of his sermon, a fugue on automotive blind spots and the lack of attention we pay to our own lives, I pulled out my laptop and started the footage.
What are you doing?
Oh, it's the homework assignment. I videotaped it. The class gathered around. See? There's an illegal right on red. Fishbinder joined the audience. Failure to signal intentions? This guy is really racking him up. I think I get his license plate here. A collective gasp as the camera zoomed in for a beautiful close-up of Fishbinder's face as he checked his blind spot. Well, at least you checked your blind spot, Joe offered helpfully. One sound, a sound I'd never heard before and I hope to never hear again, escaped Fishbinder's lips. And he ran from the room. Everyone burst into laughter. We all thought it a great joke until we realized that he wasn't coming back. The rain had started again. Joe and I stuck around with Team Liquor Sickle for a while. When the rain let up, we all left. I got a form in the mail telling me I had successfully completed the driver's re-education course and could resume full driving privileges. But there was no explanation of what happened to Fishbinder, which was somehow more unsettling than actually knowing what had happened. After a while, I deleted the footage and tried to forget all about it. But his shade haunted me. I found myself covering the brake at intersections, using my turn signals more often, and in general, driving a little slower. And then late one night, after many drinks and a cab home from the bar, I found out what happened to Fishbinder. I called Joe at 3:30 in the morning.
Hello there?
Turn on the TV, Channel 7.
What the hell is this?
Fishbinder. He's on TV. Cop cars swarming behind him on the highway. Fishbinder was headed north in the southbound lanes of traffic at 100 miles an hour. I couldn't keep track of all the violations I could see from the air and the grainy dashboard camera footage, but Fishbinder, I'm sure he had a perfect tally in his heart. The chase went on for several minutes, and at the end, sparks shooting out from where the left rear rim scraped along the pavement, Fishbinder held his middle finger high out the window, crashed through the guardrail, and into an embankment. The car didn't explode like in the movies, but pieces of it flew everywhere, and the obnoxious narrator said he was dead. The fall of Fishbinder, indeed. Our innocent prank gone horribly awry. How could we have known?